Johanna, thank you very much, and welcome everybody to the call. Our topic today is how to walk your path to leadership mastery, and that title provokes a lot of questions that I think are important for us to address. How do you know what your path is? What is leadership? What is mastery, and how do we walk it? I ask these questions not just to be picky, but it's actually fundamental to what we've learned over the years, is that in our culture, we tend to be very action-oriented. We're very concerned about how to do things. And we tend to skip over the question, what is it we're dealing with, when we begin to take action and answer this question, how do we do something? So I'm going to take you on a little journey here that's going to shift context for how we look at these questions. What is your path? What is leadership, and what is mastery? And we found that when we address what is it we're dealing with in a more powerful way, our term for that is a more generative way, that the how to do something shows up clearer and more powerful. So this journey that we're going to have today is part of a bigger journey, the journey of your life. And generative leadership has been the name I've given to the path I've been walking, that I've invited a lot of people to walk with me, and they've invited me to walk their paths as well. So perhaps we'll see our overlap in this conversation today. So in terms of context, what we're going to pay attention to, I want to start with you. So just take a moment, take a breath, and notice yourself. Notice if you're in your head with questions. If you can just take a deep breath and relax, notice if your intention. This actually is part of the leadership skill set we've worked with, is how to open ourselves. And so we're going to take this journey here, and I'm going to give you a tour of some elements of being human, some elements of yourself on this path and journey. The reason I'm going to do that is we live in a historical era that has come out of a period of hundreds of years of science, technology, and there's an automatic orientation, and it's really developed in our education system, to go to how do we do things is an answer that's external. We figure things out. We get the algorithm. We learn the science, and we go to beginning to control things and make things happen. But one thing that has been left out of that historical drift toward control and mastery of the external has been the human beings themselves. We're often left out, or we're regarded as a unit of production in a process. And when we put the human being back in, the attention still seems to be on the external actions and results of the human being. And yet, in exploring this path to leadership mastery, leadership requires connection with other people, and it actually requires connection with ourselves internally. So we're going to see how we need to reconnect our internal life with our external actions in this path of leadership. And there's many concepts of what a leader is, most of which are misleading. We kind of think the leader is the person in charge, or the leader is the person with the power, or the leader is the expert, the decision maker. And yet, we're going to take the fundamental perspective that to be a leader, you have followers, and not just people who are being compliant and responsive, but who are actually bringing ownership, bringing their full selves, bringing their best, bringing their commitment to the future. And this is going to be the perspective we're going to take on this exploration. So if you have something to write on, I'm going to invite you to take some notes. We're going to explore some questions. I'll open up a couple of points in the call to take questions. In fact, now is a good point. What does this topic of walking a path to leadership mastery provoke for you? Where have you seen this has been clear in your life or unclear? Is this a new opportunity? Do you see it's a challenge or breakdown in the world? So if you see an example of the concern that you or other people have with this topic, the questions that are provoked, let's just take a moment here and invite a couple of people to share. I find it's always relevant to get some real questions as we do an exploration of a topic to see if the kind of thinking that we're developing is going to actually be relevant addressing these real-world questions. So let me open up here. Someone can hit star 6 to unmute yourself. What question has been provoked for you that brought you to the call? Who would like to share? Do we have any takers?
And you might be speaking. We can't hear you, so don't forget the star 6.
Star 6 if you want to.
Okay.
Hello.
This is Ron.
Hello, Ron.
How are you?
Good. What's cooking?
Good. Well, I noticed when you started talking about leadership, my body started to shake, kind of.
Uh-huh.
And I was wondering if leadership was something that you're born with or something that you declare, in your life.
Yes. Yeah, great question. Thank you, Ron. Interesting that you actually noticed something was happening in the body, because leadership is a place where we are often pressing the edge of our understanding, of our comfort zone, and we do feel it in our body. Leadership is where we have to connect and meet with other people. That's often very provocative. And so the body is one of the key things we're gonna take a look at on this journey. And so when you ask this question, are you born with it? Is leadership an innate talent? Yes, there are people who are talented, who are naturally talented, that we look at and say, they're a good leader. They know what they're doing. They make things happen with other people. And this has been a fascinating exploration for me. I didn't find that I was particularly talented in that way when I started my path. I tended to be an introvert. I actually would have preferred if the world just worked and I didn't have to bother with it and focus on what I was doing. And so for me, this question of can you develop leadership really showed up in my life when I began to notice that in my body I was frustrated. I was in situations where things were not going very well. I was in organizations that didn't seem to function very well. Conversations were difficult. And I kept looking and asking the question, why can't this be more straightforward? Why can't we be better at working together and putting our energy into what we want to create, the success that we want to have, rather than the kind of grinding friction that seemed to be too common in the organizations I was in? And so I took a serious approach to this and began to speak up about what I saw possible, what I wanted to see happen, offered to take on opportunities to make things happen. But I found I was what we call blind. I actually wasn't paying attention to the right things, and so it was hard. It was difficult. And as I continued with my exploration, I began to find discourses, disciplines, frameworks in various places that turned out to be highly relevant. One was biology. We need to understand how our bodies function, how our emotional repertoire opens or closes possibilities for ourselves. How do we actually interact in language? All of these things were crucial, and if any one of them was left out, it was a missing piece to the puzzle. So with this long narrative, Ron, I would say my experience and what the work we do in the Institute for Generative Leadership is all about is this is something that can be learned through practice. And in fact, when we look at the naturals, they just had a nervous system and a path of practice that was easy for them that showed up in that skill. But the fact that it's not easy doesn't mean we can't walk it. Why would we walk a path of learning something that is not easy? Because we're called to it, because we care. And if we look at one of the famous stories that's being talked about these days, the heroine's journey, it's all about this phenomena that we're in life, we're in our life journey, and something calls to us, something meaningful knocks on the door and say, come out, we need to go somewhere. And we keep the door shut because we want to stay in the comfort zone. But when we begin to walk that path, and this heroine's journey, Joseph Campbell studied hundreds of cultures and said this is a fundamental human narrative in every culture, is we will go out of our comfort zone. We will have to pass the threshold into the unknown. And so in a certain way, the kind of leadership for the big issues of the day where there are no answers is one in which we're all going to have to learn. How am I doing, Ron, with your question? He
had to unmute me.
Yeah, there you go.
Well, I think the short answer is that, kind of like with both, that some people are born with it, so to speak, and other people can learn it.
Yes.
And that, I guess it's a real choice. When you talk about the path, I guess the question I would ask myself is, do I want to be a leader?
Exactly.
And where do I want to be a leader or show up as a leader? And then look at how that, I guess, is defined specifically in that area.
Absolutely. I think the number of natural leaders that I see around, we're in short supply. The world needs leaders. The world needs people who want to take on the learning path. And I think most of us have moments in life where we're called to go forward to take care of something better than we can do today. That's a path of leadership. And so that's what we're going to explore. Ron, thank you. Good.
Great.
To hear your
You're
voice.
Welcome.
Someone else had a comment, too. Let's take one more.
Hi, this is Joy.
Hi, Joy.
Hi. What you spoke to, mentioned about we have to lead ourselves, that's something I believe very firmly. And so one of the things that I've kind of struggled with is conveying that in the business world, the importance of self-leadership or how to communicate that. So anything that you have to say to be more, to expand on that theme about self-leadership and the impact that that has in everything else that goes on outside, I'd appreciate it.
Okay, good. I think we're going to unpack a lot in that direction. Let me just give you a highlight, Joy, of where we're going. We live in an era where I speak about how our background common sense, our automatic interpretations, tend to arise concerning action and results and organizations and leadership and all that stuff, tends to get packed into what I call the mechanical metaphor, that we tend to see action in the way we see doing things. Like we're going to get the machine built. We're going to get everything oiled up. We're going to tune it up. We're going to refine it. And that way of thinking tends to put our attention on external action. And so the human being in the full depth that we bring with our internal life tends to be left out. And yet, this new context I want to share with you is all external action is driven by internal choice. All external action happens in a mood and an energy that we feel with other people, where we feel connected or we feel disconnected. It has an emotional energy that's positive or negative. And it has something that's meaningful in a story that we have about what life is about, what our career is about, what we're taking care of, or it doesn't. And when we boil all that down and ignore it and just say, you know, turn the crank harder and measure the results, we're really missing the very source of action itself. And that requires us to go internal. So let me begin sharing a tour here of this territory that we've been exploring literally for decades and see if we can show some illumination on this path of towards leadership mastery. So let me begin with this comment I made before that effective leaders produce followers. And by followers, I'm meaning people who actually share a commitment to make something happen that they have some ownership for. There's a measurement being widely spoken about in business today called engagement, that a lot of the survey companies are saying, are people engaged? And unfortunately, they're finding that to the standards of engagement, up to 75% of the workforce in the U.S. is considered to be disengaged from their work. What does that mean? They're being compliant. They're doing what they're told, but there's no ownership. There's no meaning. And when you have that, you don't have innovation. You don't have people improvising to take care. And so there's a huge, huge asset of human possibility and energy and care and action that's not being tapped into. And when businesses look and say, we need to innovate, we need to be better in what we do, that can't happen unless we tap in to what do people care about. So the first step on this leadership journey is, do you know what you care about? And yes, we want to live well. Yes, we want to make a good income. Yes, we want things. But in the end, does it really take care of what you care about? What is a good life? A good life is not simply doing well and having more. It has some meaning. It actually something you're doing what you're called to do, what you're there to do. And if you engage with all the breakdowns of that people have in this perspective of engagement, we see that people who are successful wind up sometimes having a life that's not full of meaning, even though they're successful. The people who work the hardest, we see them on drugs or having life issues with their family. People who are drifting, they're not particularly successful. They're not particularly in breakdown. They're just kind of moseying along, turning the crank, getting along. There's a lack of meaning there as well. And then we find people that are in huge breakdown. Jim Lohr has a company where he measures people's vitality. And in a four-year period, he had 100,000 managers and executives come through his program. And from these vitality measures, surveys that were both physical, mental, and surveys of relationship, he found that 18% of these people who were the leaders from company coming through his clinic in Florida were headed in a negative direction. They were going to crash and burn. So the amount of people that were on the positive end of that scale was about 8%. So there's something really missing in our understanding of action, of organizational life, and it's certainly a concern for leadership. So I'm going to focus on what do you care about is a key question. When we do our programs with people, we do long programs. We have programs that are 3 years long where people sign up a year at a time. And the first question we engage with them is, what do you care about? But from the point of view that care is essential for action in the world. Do you want someone serving you? Do you want someone working for you who doesn't care about what they're doing? Who doesn't care about you? And so as we see companies more and more focusing on process and taking the human variability out, what we also take out is this having a work environment where we can really care about what we do and care about each other. So when we go to this question of care, it's not only fundamental for action, it's the most powerful answer to the question that I found I could not ignore, which is, what is a human being? So when I talk to business audiences, the first reaction I know they're going to have when I ask this question, what is a human being? You know, Bob's getting philosophical here. Yeah, the conversation's going irrelevant. This is just an abstract. Let's just get to work and get down to real stuff that's going on. But I have found that what is a human being is the most important question in business, in organizational life, and in leadership. And the reason is we are living a default answer to that question. If we haven't stopped and really looked at what is a human being in my interpretation, what's a human being in my life, what's a human being in the way that we treat people in our organization, we find that the assumptions can really take us away from what is core to action, and value arises from human action, human care, and human taking care. So care is the first step on the path to leadership mastery. And when we articulate that care, it's not simply being in the state of caring, it's making the choices to take care. And this takes us into our personal life to say, where am I going with my career? What do I really want to choose for the work that I do? And people have all kinds of stories that are shaping their life. Well, I have to make a living. I don't have a choice. Or I'm not sure. Or I'm not good enough. Or I can't create value. Or I'm not one of those people who was born a leader. And yet, what we have found through practice is when we clarify our care, it connects to that part of us, that core part of us, that is where we find meaning. It's where we take ownership. It's where risk is no longer frightening. It's where we're willing to step forward to make our situation, wherever it is and whatever it is, something that can be better. So when we finally begin to connect to that, and I know today in the education system, I talk to many people in their early and late 20s, recent college graduates, and they're a bit disillusioned from having participated in the college education experience because it hasn't connected them to their care. Or if they're clear about care, they don't see how what they're learning is addressing that. And so that's, for me, the biggest concern I have for all the breakdowns in the world, which are being generated by human action, is if we don't get back and reconnect to our care, then we have people operating in what kind of framework? What are we doing if we're not taking care of what we care about? So if we start that journey, and in the framework of the hero-heroine's journey, that calling of what do you care about and are you going to take care of it is coming to the threshold. And when we come to the threshold of that journey, all the voices are there to warn us not to go through. All the risks, all the fears are provoked. And some people turn away. Some people withdraw from that opportunity to step through the door into a new future, out of fear, out of unfamiliarity with being out of their comfort zone. But if we finally accept that and we step forward, and this care that I'm talking about is not just a personal of selfish care. Sometimes what we care about is to really make a difference in the world. Sometimes what we want to do is really elevate the quality and excellence of what we're doing in our organizations. What really motivates us as meaningful is to have something out there in the world really be contributed to in a new way. So it's not simply being selfish. It's what am I going to take care of as a human being? And when we begin to walk this path, that's answering the question, is this your path? If it's not a path in which you are taking care of something that you care about, I'm going to propose to you that we hold that as that's not your path. That's a path that someone else designed. That's where you found yourself, but it's not your path yet. In one of the mythologies of Carlos Castaneda, he writes about Don Juan, the Yaqui shaman, and he said something, the one thing I remember in reading that is Don Juan said, the only path worth walking in life is the path with heart. So if we're on this path, where are we going? And it raises this question, for the sake of what are we taking this path? Where are we going? How is it taking us where we want to go? And in the hero, heroine's journey, this path will always take us into what Campbell called the belly of the whale. In Chinese inner wisdom traditions, the path always takes us to darkness. When we go from where we are on a transformational journey to become something more than we are, to follow that calling, we have to go through a period of darkness. That's not a breakdown with the path. That's not something wrong in the situation. That's not even an inadequacy of ourselves. It is part of the path. And this is where many people turn away. They think there should be a procedure rather than going into the unknown, where you have to find your own reality internally. But if we do that, and we're constantly looking at where am I going, why am I going there, what am I taking care of? For example, you may be an executive or a manager in an organization saying, as I did, I simply want my organization to be healthy. I want our energies to go into success rather than the grind of continual breakdown. I just want us to be alive in what we're doing. It could be something as simple as that. Then we have a chance to walk this path, and the walking of the path is practice. Now, in the blog article, I mention how people have been writing about practice as a path to mastery. They quote the 10,000 hours is what masters have done in order to achieve mastery. But as I calculated that, that's a bit over 5 years of full-time practice. But we're all spending 10,000 hours. So the answer is not the 10,000 hours. The answer is, what are you practicing? What kind of practice are you doing in your 10,000 hours? And since you're spending 10,000 hours just living your life, doing your work the way you do it, then if we're going to be walking the path to mastery, how do we begin to have that everyday living, everyday working, begin to be a place where we are practicing mastery? We are walking forward toward what we care about. We are having more impact in the world as leaders. And so, as we've explored practice, there are dimensions of practice that are not commonly included in our understanding of action and learning that we have found are unavoidable. The first is your body. Ron mentioned he noticed something going on in his body. We are practicing. One of the things that our culture is recognizing that includes the body is leadership presence. And we actually use the word somatics, which is a term that refers to the body and mind as one unity rather than separate. So this is one place that we have learned to work with ourselves and with our students and clients, which is, are you somatically aware? Why do we need to be somatically aware? Because when you're in conversation, when you're looking to lead, when you're looking to produce action, when you're looking to create value, your body's always talking louder than your mouth. If your body isn't aligned with the intent of what you're saying, that's where people will listen to you. Then there's emotional dimension to every conversation. When we interact with people as leaders, there's always emotions. It's either opening or closing, up or down. And the body and emotions affect each other. And that always is shaped in a conversation in which there's language. And language that's not only that which is said, but that which is not said, but is still listened. And so the coherence of these dimensions is a place that we learn to pay attention. When people practice something that's physical, that's a performance art like public speaking, all of these things are there. What's happening with the body language, what's happening with the emotions, what's happening with what you say, and how does that connect to people's care? Why do we want to connect to care? Because that makes the outcome meaningful. So, for example, in organizations, no matter what the content of work is, we have found that people on teams will find meaning in themes such as excellence. Why don't we do what we do with excellence? Another theme that resonates for people, regardless of the content of their job, is learning. What's the opportunity for learning here? What's the opportunity for growing our identity in our career? And what we're doing on the job can be a place to practice all of these things. But that needs to be something that we're authentically engaged with, not simply talking about. And so we actually include the dimension of practice, because that's what's produced the way we show up in this moment. And if we're going to shift on our journey to developing skill, to increasing our impact, to being able to make bigger promises, to have people be more interested in going with you into the future, then practice is how we're going to get there. And so this question of what to practice comes up. And I've laid out, if we have an acronym using these terms, somatics, emotions, language, practice, SELP, and we wind up putting an H on the end for history, because we are a product of the history of our practice, both somatically, emotionally, linguistically. SELPH is a way we refer to the self, which is the dimensions that we want to become aware of and pay attention to. So one of the key things about shifting the context to be more effective on walking a path to mastery, we have found, is awakening to these dimensions of what we need to be aware of and pay attention to. What is your body saying? What is the emotional pattern that you fall into in your self-talk and your engagement with others? How do you handle breakdowns? What does your body do? And so these are all areas of practice. And practice, leadership, when you look at it as something that's a skill developed rather than an innate talent. By the way, the studies on innate talent have shown that people we think are naturals really didn't get that way because they were born that way. They got that way because what was natural for them was to practice the right things. They still had to practice. And so the studies of practice have shown that it takes 300 repetitions to have any muscle memory at all, 3,000 repetitions to produce transparent embodiment. So the good news is we can learn and get better through practice. The concern is, are you practicing the right thing? Are you practicing being mediocre? Are you practicing being angry? Are you practicing being righteous? We can get very good at what we practice. And so the focus that we've had in our work with generative leadership is, what do we practice? How do we practice being clear about what we care about and connecting to the care of others? How do we practice the performance art of leadership, which is conversation? You don't lead without conversation. It's not a telepathic sport. And because it's a performance art, I often refer to communication, teamwork, and leadership as a full-body contact sport, because what we do connects and influences others, even at the physiological level. There's a part of our brain called the limbic system. The limbic system is where the research has shown we tend to have the focus of our emotional life. And when people interact in conversation, we either have a sense of connection or we don't. And when we do connect and we begin to produce a sense of resonance, this is when teams really feel like they're on the same page. We're really in this together. We're really flowing. We're really moving together. It's a state of limbic resonance. This is something that can be learned. This is something that we can develop through practice. Now, as we practice, there's a chance to go toward mastery. And so, what is mastery? Mastery in our framework is a standard of assessment that you are not only competent, you are not only an expert, but you've gone beyond that. You're the person that the experts come to for advice. Why? Because your journey has shaped you through your practice and shown you so much that you have to contribute to others. In fact, in our framework, mastery is where you have so mastered the field that you're not simply a virtuoso in performance, but you're actually creating in the field. You're actually shifting it. Einstein just wasn't a great physicist. He reshaped physics, for example. He's an example of kind of a legendary figure. But if what we're practicing, we're not practicing to become Einstein, this focus on what do you care about, what are you going to take care of, and then learning to make commitments is key. This is another aspect of our context. Care without commitment is yearning. Commitment without care is compliant action. But when we put them together, we have the meaning and drive of care. We have the choice of focus that commitment makes. And leaders are skillful at generating shared commitments with other people. Where does this happen? In conversation. Full body engagement in conversation. So as we look here, the practicing that I'm going to invite you to pay attention to here is to notice what you're aware of and what you pay attention to and not. And I'm inviting you from our decades of experience that what you care about is not simply there, it's not simply important, it's crucial. What you do and what you don't do, how you show up for others, positively or negative, has to do with how you relate to your own care. How do you choose to take care is the next step on the journey. Then how do you choose to develop your capacity to take care through practice is the following step. And when you do that and say, I want to make a bigger impact than I can make alone, then we're really firmly in the leadership game. We're learning how to coordinate action, how to have the conversations that produces excellence in teamwork, that includes some skills like planning and projects and all of that, but bringing this full ownership, this full engagement, and really doing it not simply from getting the work done, but from engaging because we care, and doing it with such ownership that we're willing to go beyond our comfort zone, beyond our old competency, to grow it, both as an individual and as a team. Then we're really walking a path toward mastery instead of staying where we're comfortable. So we've actually explored the field of linguistics, of emotional intelligence as it applies to conversational skills, of the physical dimensions. And so I mention these to invite you. One thing you can do here is to do a little journaling just to help you become more aware what happens in conversation. Because if you pay attention to how you listen, it's amazing how we pretty much see the future unfolding from a moment of a conversation. But we're taught not to pay attention to that. We're just talking about the content of the conversation rather than the framework in which it's arising. So there's where we practice. Are we listening to care, mine and others? Are we listening to the level of commitment? Is it clear? Is it trustworthy? Are we learning to have new conversations? Conversations for action. Conversations for possibility. Conversations that move from possibility to action. Conversations for creating value. And perhaps the most powerful, conversations to shift the context. When we begin to see this conversational dimension is where we take our internal states of commitment, our internal states of possibility, put it on audio with other people, and begin to create a shared space, there's where leadership happens. And we begin to see that areas that are considered fairly mysterious in our culture, like innovation and strategy and value creation, all of a sudden show up with a structure that we can practice. So a couple more points here I want to share with you about this journey. One is that when we're really taking a stand for excellence in our work with others, excellence in our organization, with having a valuable impact in the world, we're usually taking on something that's bigger than anyone knows the answer of how to do. We're taking on a big concern, not simply to win the game, but to really produce value, to shift something that's happening in the world. This is the game of business, to offer value in a way that people accept it and see that they have improved their lives by accepting our offer. So to do that, we're always going to what I call the edge and beyond the edge. Beyond the edge, beyond the edge of where we already know, beyond the edge of where we're already comfortable, beyond the edge where things are already settled, is where the possibilities are. And leadership is not simply getting excellent in a domain. That's expertise. It's also becoming powerful in a relationship with the edge, to be able to go beyond it, to explore what's possible beyond yesterday, to create a new future with others. And if we do this, I just want you to take a moment and see how you're listening. Does this sound like a lot of activities out there in the world to get good at? Remember, we're trying to connect our internal life, our internal way of being with external action. And when we bring it back to this personal experience of walking the path to mastery, one tradition that speaks about this is fulfilling your destiny, that you were born to be you. And fulfilling your destiny is to walk the path of becoming fully you, not shaping yourself to be something that someone else said you should be or to fit into a slot. There is where I think we often see that energy being manifested through entrepreneurship, where people are willing to make their offer. And when we do that, when we look that there is a breakdown in the world that we care about, that there's a possibility that we want to take care of through our offers, we talk about an outcome being understood as a condition of satisfaction for some other human being. We want to create a new condition of satisfaction and build a team that can promise that. That's the essence of entrepreneurship. But it connects to our care, connects to what we're going to take care of, and our path of practice is to have those bold conversations, to move things forward, to coordinate action with teams to make it happen. So my invitation, as you take a look from this perspective that I'm sharing with you, is to just be in question, to be curious. What path are you walking? You're going somewhere in life. Where are you going? Does that destination really connect for you? Does it make you more alive, or are you turning the crank? What are you practicing? Are you practicing in the moment? Are you practicing in that moment of where you can bring your voice to bear, in that moment of connecting with people that you're working with? Are you practicing in the body? Are you even aware of what your body is saying? Are you practicing in bringing your heart fully to what you're doing? When we do that, this is the combination of powerful action, of powerful leadership in the world, with that which is meaningful for each of us. The result of that is you are more alive, not sacrificing more. And if we do that, then the edge is not so frightening anymore. The last thing I'll say on this journey is it's crucial that we learn to not try to do this solo. Our school system and our frameworks tend to reward the person who stands out. But I think the way we make the bigger impact and bigger promises is when we walk our path to the future with others. So those are highlights of what we've discovered. And I simply want to say again that as I speak about these parts of our lives of care, commitment, and choice, this is not simply a personal affair. It is where action happens when we're in leadership, when we're in followership. And this is where, from the work we've done, we find that powerful innovation, culture change, and excellence comes from. So take a moment here, and let's open up for comments and questions. I've done quite an overview of this perspective, this view of this path of walking your path to mastery. And so let's see what I provoked. Questions, breakthroughs, breakdowns. Hit star 6, and let's see how we're doing.
Hello, Bob. This is Carlos.
Hi, Carlos.
Hello. I have a question, Bob, and in terms of, I was thinking of, I've been speaking with my team in my company about cares, about our mutual cares. And we have had very interesting chats. But my question is, how do you maintain your shared, your mutual cares alive? In this case, with your team.
Yeah.
How do you make sure that those cares are not in the background with them, and they are continually in front of them?
Yes, your question reminds me of people dealing with relationship or marriage issues, where it's often characterized as the woman of the relationship says, you never tell me you love me, and the man says, but I do.
Right.
And so here's where our internal state needs to have some appearance in our external practice. And it's got to have a certain emotional, it's not simply a procedure. We can't just do it procedurally. But you know that when you're with a friend for lunch and you're in your head thinking about what you need to do to go back to work and you don't really connect with your friend or look them in the eye, something's really missing. And so to take a deep breath and actually be in the moment, to actually connect and say authentically, what's happening for you changes everything. So my experience is that keeping the care alive is something that needs to be done as a practice, not a one-shot. It's not an intense once a year, go to the mountaintop, let's do a strategy session, really have an intense experience, and then we go and turn the crank for a year. And so I found ways to have this conversation on an ongoing basis with my team, both individually and together. And the art of it is not to have some script, but to actually provoke the question and listen. How are we doing? And probably the biggest way that you can listen to the care of your team is not simply are they caring, but do they feel that they are taking care of what they care about? And the biggest indicator of that is their energy. If their mood is down, if there's resignation, there's something missing. And so this is part of the conversational art and the art of listening. Does this make sense, Carlos?
Yeah, Bob. Yeah, absolutely. What you just said, that it is a practice. It is not a script. It is a continual conversation that I need to maintain alive. Yeah, it was pretty clear. Thank you.
Yeah, you know, when you have a real good time with your children, you don't say, well, I've crossed that off the list. I don't need to do that again.
Absolutely.
It's where we live, right? It's where we're living. From this perspective, leadership is life. Leadership is about creating aliveness. And then what we're doing with that aliveness and what we're producing is also relevant. But the mechanical metaphor comes in and shuts us down, closes our heart, and just have us grind for some measurable outcome. But the performance we get is always much less than if we actually were fully engaged. Carlos, thank you.
Yeah, no, thank you.
Who else? Hit star 6. What have we provoked?
Hi, Bob. It's Michael.
Hey, Michael.
Hi, Bob. Mike. Thanks for the talk. Really appreciate it. I just have a question. Are you able to give some real-life examples of practices that somebody can start using to develop their leadership mastery?
Yeah. Well, let me give you some highlights. First of all, Johanna mentioned our Foundations of Generative Leadership workshop, and the reason I mentioned that is it's a 3-day event which we're actually doing the practices I'm going to mention. So one practice we just spoke about, which is do you have conversations about what you care about? Interestingly enough, Michael, when we get people in our programs engaged in this question, we find they almost never have that conversation going on. It's a practice itself, just from the way I was speaking with Carlos. Second is to actually notice when you're in conversation and interaction with people, are you actually there? Do you actually connect? Most of us are not very educated into how to notice the body language dimension of conversation. And so a lot of people go to their heads, it's a conversation between heads. It's not a conversation between hearts. And so we learn to breathe, relax, actually connect. It changes the whole conversation, changes the relevance and the meaning. Then there's the listening for commitment. There's a whole body of work that's available that's very powerful that has to do with how do you clarify and negotiate shared commitment conversationally. But the practice that I found when I began this that was new for me was when I was engaged with talking with people about taking action, no one ever told me to listen to the commitment. I just listened to the words. And so when people say, one of the exercises we do, for example, is to put people in pairs. I do this in every workshop. And you go back and forth. And you say the words, I will. But every time you say it, you have to say it so it means something different. And it shows you immediately that the meaning of the conversation has very little to do with the words. And so you can begin practicing by saying, what is the real commitment that is coming up in this conversation, that's coming forth from this person? Are these helpful?
Yes, thank you very much.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Michael. And we've come to the end of our scheduled time. I always wind up going over my allotted time because I love the conversation. But I want to thank you all for this time to interact, for this chance that this gave me to share what work we have been working with. And I would just say our culture is in a drift where a lot of what I've been talking about is a blind spot. And when we see what it takes to develop mastery in leadership, what it takes to be practicing, it's probably distinctions that we haven't been educated to. So I invite you to check out what we're doing at the Institute. Our work is not simply conceptual, but practice-based to develop real skill and impact in your life and work. So if you accept that invitation, I hope to see you down the road or at one of our future calls. And with that, let me turn the call back over to Johanna. Thank you all very much.